welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 105th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots. Today's episode is going to be the end of the year. EJ and I are talking about the best, the worst, and possibly some deep tracks from 2016. I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. Joining me in the banter is my co-host, movie critic EJ Marino.
It's my favorite time of the year. It's not Christmas time. It's let's review the whole year of film time. One of the best times of the year. Can't wait to break down all the crazy stuff that happened in cinemas this year. It's been a pretty wild 2016 in film.
I'm one of those people that gets stuck always looking backwards as opposed to looking ahead. So this is my favorite time. So I'm like, oh, let's just reminisce. I'm a reminiscer, people. That's what I like to do. I love those good times that I had at summer camp that I'll never get back ever again. This year was really interesting for film.
I think it's getting hailed as probably one of the worst years. And I don't think we've had amazing films back to back to back, but you know, I think there's been some great ones, and as much as poop has come out, there's been some really good gold shining stars this year.
Golden poop shining stars, or just like...
Yeah, like some very nicely dressed and ornamented poop.
This year is the first year that we've gone full-blown, like, critic mode, so I've analyzed everything that's come out from Rotten Tomatoes and everything that's going on, and there's some films that I just don't understand why people love. Like, I will never understand why people love The Jungle Book for this year. Like, I thought it was just a very generic, boring story. They used some great CG effects, and there were some cool visuals. But, like, as far as a story and creating, like, a good, intense film, the way it's supposed to be, even the cartoon even has some intense moments to it, I was left clueless on that film.
Yeah, I've always kind of not agreed with Rotten Tomatoes. And then this year was, like you said, everything's kind of going into full critical mode. And I'm like... Really? People liked Sully that much? Okay, like, it was just, this really opened
Sully's
my eyes.
Sully's a good film, man! I don't know why you don't like old white dudes that fly planes, man!
I told you my personal things with it. Like, I didn't like how they kind of villainized certain things. Like, that was just something that I was just like, oh, people like that as much as they did. I thought it was a respectable film.
America!
But, you know, to see the passion for that, I was just like...
America!
It is the American passion. This is the year of Trump. So we'll see. So yeah, that I think that really kind of shaped a lot. But no, this was a year that I was like, well, I really am far off from the average critical opinion.
Yes, you are really far off from the average critic. And I love going to our screenings because then I see average critics talk about EJ's reviews and they're like, what the fuck? It's great. I love it.
I kind of like that I get little people flustered. And I think people think I do it for attention. I'm like, no. Unfortunately, this is how I really feel. This is all my opinion. And it's sometimes a little abrasive, but it's kind of fun too. It's like, I think this year I talked about it in my end of the year thing for the website is it got kind of fun to defend some of the movies I liked. Like, I talked so much great things about Batman v Superman every time someone tried to bash it. I'm like, no, I liked it. So it's been fun this year to kind of like defend my point of view a lot as well.
I'm going to say this right now, but I'm hoping that in 2017, we can actually just have civil debates about films. It's not going to be the Ghostbusters debacle. It's not going to be Marvel versus DC debacle. Like, they're making tons of films about great subjects that we enjoy. And with Netflix, Hulu, and the other video on demand services, you're getting a lot of indie films being created right now. And I'm hoping that we can just enjoy the things that we enjoy instead of enjoying the things that we enjoy and trying to put somebody else down at the same time.
Yeah, that's my number one thing is if I don't enjoy a piece or a project, like I'm not a big MCU fan, but I will never put down people who enjoy them. I will bash the movie to hell because that's what we're supposed to be doing is doing critical looks of a project. But to say you're stupid for liking something or that was dumb, you know, I just don't – there is some negativity that I don't agree with. I think we do need to have a critical eye and be kind of harsh on things that we need to be harsh on. But don't ever put down other people for liking what they'd like. That's my number one rule. I don't love Rogue One. I liked it, but I will never tell someone they're stupid for having a massive passion for anything. So that's one big thing, like you said. Let's make 2017 just a better year for kind of a little bit more positivity. Just a tiny bit, if anything, just a little bit more positivity.
I did like that you were in a Star Wars Facebook group over the weekend and you called out a dude that was like, told somebody else to kill themselves. And you were like, you just told somebody to kill themselves over Star Wars, man.
Like, yeah, that was it was like a fake spoiler that like he was like, you should kill yourself, bro. And I'm like, it's a movie. That's the stuff that I'm like, I understand passion for film. I like film enough to go to film school. I get it. But that's not passion for film. That's just being just rude. So I was just like, yeah, this is the level of like fan stuff that I'm like, no, like just calm down, everybody. Breathe. Like, Focus that energy somewhere else.
But Boba Fett's cameo in Rogue One was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. You know what? They had enough shoehorned cameos in there that I'm pretty sure Boba Fett's like an inch big somewhere in this really big wide shot, and someone will find it. It's like, where's Waldo? That's what that Star Wars movie felt like, was where's the cameos that we need?
Okay, this isn't about Rogue One and your bashing of the film, because you liked it. You were surprised by the film. Okay, so you can't just
not
change.
My most surprised.
You can't. But. I'm not. Did I say it was the most surprised film? I said you were surprised, pleasantly surprised. So you can't go back because we can go back to the recorder and we can actually play where you were like, "Hey, I liked it. It was pleasantly surprised. We're good." And then you're like, "Oh man, can't believe that they did."
Don't roll the tape. Don't prove that I'm actually not a horrible human being all the time.
How do you want to start off this list? Because our list is the best, the worst, the biggest surprise, and the most enjoyed film of 2016. I think we should start just guns blazing with our best films.
Yeah, let's just kind of end, you know, start big and we'll end big. I think that's the best idea.
Round one.
Oh, man. And I still need you to explain this film to me because I have yet to see it. And I don't want you to beat me up because I haven't seen this film. I mean, I have a kid. I have a wife. I run the website. We have 43 reporters. I am a little busy.
No. I understand. But yes, you have to see this. At least at one point, I hope to. But yeah, my best of the year is The Handmaiden. It's a South Korean film, Park Chan-wook. I kind of talked about it a little bit before, but I really have just a deep passion. This is the movie for, I think, cinema geek nerds. Like, this is the peak of like what I think filmmaking should be. Does this bash any other film? No. But I think this is like when I look for a project.
Okay, slow down. One second. Don't mean to cut you off. You said this is the peak of what filmmaking should be.
Yes.
Explain that sentence right there.
Well, what this does is put focus on every department within filmmaking. The art direction strong. The script is incredibly beautiful. The story, it's beautiful. The acting's great. The directing's great. Cinematography. This is where I think every movie will talk about, you know, there's something that it's a little weak in at least one department. But for me, The Handmaiden has, it checks off every box. Like, if this was my Oscars, this could probably win almost every category that is there, from lead actress to cinematography to sound design to the score. Everything just is exactly where it should be. And I really admire that. As I don't see many films like this where I'm like, this was an art piece. This was a project that someone put passion and effort into it, and everyone does, but just something about this was, it just blew my mind.
What's the film about?
The Handmaidens, it's set in Korea, but during the time where Japan ran Korea. It's maybe early 30s, so it's a little kind of Victorian feel. It's a different feeling and environment. So that was interesting. So there's a queen or an empress who they send the handmaiden to. So she gets picked from a random family and sent into this house. And then from there, there's a love relationship between her and the queen empress that she's supposed to be, you know, this high power ruler. And there's a revenge plot there. They're trying to steal her money. But as they're trying to steal her money, the handmaiden's like, no, I actually love her. So it's like a reverse revenge plot. It's exactly what I want. It's psycho thriller. It's a little sexual. Actually, it's really sexual. There's a lot of eroticism in it.
Well, as soon as you say handmaiden in Asian film, you automatically go down a dark path sometimes.
Absolutely. No, you kind of start thinking of happy ending kind of things. And no, not that kind of thing. But no, there's a lot of sexuality, beautifulness. And I think Moonlight this year got a lot of credit for, you know, putting sexuality in the upfront of films and making it very realistic. But The Handmaiden is completely out there with it. It strips back all that raw organicness and gives you, you know, there's a lot of like conversion therapy aspects in this, and it gets dark and very weird. And
conversion kind of therapy, like there was gay dudes and they were trying to make them straight.
No, with what the one of the women is, they give her this like this kind of dummy doll of a man, and she basically has to straddle it. And it's this very like, here's what a man feels like. You're supposed to like it. And it's an intense scene of like just how they set up. It's beautifully scaled. I love that scene, but it was really hard to watch as a gay man myself. I'm like, that was a little brutal. And I thought it was interesting. And something about Park Chan-wook, he did Old Boy, which is one of the craziest Korean films ever. It was remade by Spike Lee. We talked about it a little bit in a previous podcast. So I was like, oh man, I don't know if you can ever beat Old Boy. And The Handmaiden it's like Old Boy on steroids.
Okay. And see, this is the type of film, the way I watch films is I have to be in certain state of minds to watch them. And I'm like, I can't just pop that in and sit on the couch and be like, hey, let's watch The Handmaiden. I don't know what the appropriate drink is to go with The Handmaiden, or like what is the proper meal that I should have before that, and then just do I go meditate a little bit before I watch it? Like, but I feel like it's more than just a film.
Yes, and it's an experience, and that's what I think what fell in love with it. Were you saying it's more than a film? And that's exactly what it is. It really kind of sucked me in. It was just this beautiful world, and more so than I think any movie has this year. I really liked a lot of pieces, but this one was the one that like got me invested. When it ended, I was just like, I want to go back. I want to see more of this. I need more of this. And I think that was hard for me to find something this passionate about, because I was like, ooh, I liked Batman Superman. Ooh, I liked Arrival. And then I saw Handmaiden, and I'm like, cool, I liked those, but I loved this. This was a film. All the other movies I've seen are movies. This was a film.
My best film of the year is a tough one. Because if you asked me last week, right after I got out of Rogue One, I'd have been like, that's the best film of the year. Because like my Star Wars nerd like exploded all over the place. It was amazing. But the two I've been wrestling with is Hell or High Water and then The Arrival. The sci-fi geek in me really loves The Arrival, loves the headiness of the story, because it kind of breaks down into this. It comes down to these making choices. And if you know the end result, would you still make those choices, like those moments? It's about you and I. Like, if I knew you were going to die next week, would I still do this podcast? Yes, because like I'm going to enjoy this hour that we talk about movies. And I'm sorry that you died, but like, you know, I mean, like it's one, I don't know. I don't want to really like spoil the film, but it has like a sci-fi element, like The Walking Dead, where like zombies are in the film, but zombies are just the background. And then it's that human interaction and that what goes on with humans and how they communicate and how they deal with stress and drama and all these things and all the things that I really like. And that's why Arrival is an awesome film. And I don't really think I gave it justice, but I love that film. But then I saw Hell or High Water the same exact week. I waited because I know that's the type of movie where I was like, I need a steak and I need some scotch and I need everybody to leave me alone. I need to watch this film. And it was my nice 10 p.m. showing at the Sardo Theater. The final scene of Hell or High Water between Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine is one of the most amazing pieces of cinema I've seen in the past few years. Just the exchange and the machismo and the conversation about killing each other but not actually telling each other that they're going to kill each other. It was just so intense and amazing. And just the way it kind of rode off into the sunset, because it's a Western, it's a modern day Western, that scene just kept growing on me over time. And so Arrival has been one, and then Hell or High Water was one. The more time I moved away, and now the more time I move away, I kind of think about Arrival and all the multi-layers that were in that film.
What I like about your two films is they're both, you know, one's a Western, one is a sci-fi film, but they're think pieces. They take this genre and really throw it into a whole different level. And I really appreciate, like, a film like Hell or High Water, which takes Westerns that Westerns have been done to hell throughout decades and decades, and it gave it a whole different feeling. Same thing with Arrival. Arrival is a sci-fi film. We've seen sci-fi films since the dawn of cinema, but it made me think, and I really appreciate your two pieces for kind of expanding on their genre.
Well, Hell or High Water is a very simple plot. Two guys are robbing banks to get money to whatever their journey is, and then there's the cops that are chasing them, and you know it's eventually going to lead up to a battle or a shootout and stuff like that. So it's like, do they get away? Do they not get away? So it's a very generic plot. But then what surprised me is I've never really seen Chris Pine act before or get gritty or like hurt and bruised and like with the conversation that he was dealing with. And like he brought something to the table that I hadn't seen before in him. I saw glimmers of it in like the first Star Wars film, but I haven't seen it since then.
Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we don't want to piss off those nerds.
Oh, man. That's tough. I think we should have a game where, like, if you screw up, you just lose nerd cred because I just lost some. But no, Chris Pine brought something extra to this film because I saw him in three films this year because he had the boat drama, he had the ship drama with Star Trek, and then he had the real life drama in Hell or High Water. And this was one where he just brought it. And the same thing with Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges is evolving into this type of person that's more than just, you know, I'm trying to think of who it is. It's not Marlon Brando, but there's those actors that just kind of roll in and they just create what they're creating. And I don't know, but he's kind of just the way he's growing and the way he's aging, he's just evolving into this next level kind of actor.
He's having such a great second half of a career. I have loved what he's done. And yeah, he has this presence in films that he kind of walks in and you're just like, oh, he's here. And that, like you said, Marlon Brando had that. I think sometimes like mid-career Samuel Jackson had that. He would walk into somewhere and you'd be like, oh, Samuel Jackson. And I think Jeff Bridges is getting to that level where you're like, I'm getting pumped when he's in a movie. And I'm really happy that he's hitting this point in his career.
But my best of 2016 final answer has got to go with The Arrival. There was a lot of layers to that film, and then they covered it up. They kind of covered it with a bow of sci-fi that got me in the door. Because if this was covered in something else, I don't know, just a medical drama or some sort of women's drama, like Beaches, if it was covered in a Beaches bow, I would have not gone see this. But I would have missed out. But since they put it on the sci-fi cover, I was like, ooh, let me check this out. And then you get to the meat and potatoes of the script and of the film, and you're like, wow. We're going to take a short commercial break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the worst films of 2016.
Round two.
2016 is getting a bad rep for putting a pile of nutsacks on the screen for me to watch, and I am definitely going to say that 2016 is the year of the nutsack. And my nutsack award-winning film has got to be the animated film Batman the Killing Joke, because they took an amazing, controversial, gritty piece of artwork and then they turned it into a song and dance number and put it on the big screen just to make money for money's sake, and they just bashed the original material, and it just bothered me on so many different levels of what they did with it. And that is why Batman the Killing Joke is my worst film of 2016.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of it. I enjoyed some of the aspects of it, but I definitely agree. I thought it was more just a letdown. God, I was just like, this was something that could have been amazing. And I don't hate the Batgirl kind of beginning that it had. That didn't really bother me. But then there's elements that I'm like, this is not as controversial or R-rated, or they kind of marketed and pushed this to be a different film than what it was. So I was just like, oh, that was okay.
I even put that out of my memory that Batgirl and Batman were having sex. Oh, yeah. There's that on that, too. Oh, so creepy. God. I knew there was something angry about this film. God, this is, yeah, again, what you said. The film had a lot of hype to it because it was this amazing source material. And then it was a film that I said shouldn't be made because you're making a cartoon and some little kid's going to watch it and be like, oh, look, Batgirl's getting shot and possibly raped. Not really sure what's going on with that because it's kind of vague. And she's having sex with Batman. I'm really confused right now. And I shouldn't have watched this as a six-year-old because I know that six-year-olds have watched this film. And I think that bothers me on a morality standard that only I can judge people. Because I live in a glass house and I'm throwing stones. You know, that's me. but no, it just didn't work on so many different levels. And you brought in Mark Hamill to do this grim, gritty thing that they just didn't pull off on any level whatsoever.
But I will say I liked Mark Hamill's song and dance number. Everyone hated the Joker's little musical number, but I was like, it's so insane. And Mark Hamill is the only person voice-wise who could have carried that and made it feel as serious as it, you know.
It wasn't serious!
But something about what Mark Hamill did with it, I really enjoyed that whole segment. I think if that was in anything else, I would have been like, oh, that was kind of fun. But the rest of the movie surrounding it didn't match what that was.
I probably could just watch the song and dance number and be like, oh, yeah, that's the Joker that I know and love. And I think he's amazing. A performance by Mark Hamill. But like you said, in the context, it just doesn't work. It just, that point right there, that song and dance scene was supposed to be where the Joker breaks Commissioner Gordon. And I was more tripped out in the original Willy Wonka going on a boat ride than I was with the song and dance number of the Joker. And you never get the essence of what the source material does. And you had it. It's right there. I mean, the frames are there in the comic book. Like, you're going through this tunnel of terror and all these images are going through you. And like, we've seen filmmaking where they can make things intense and scary and disrupt your consciousness and just trip you out and to jar you. They didn't do anything to jar the audience because that's what you're supposed to do with this material. Like, it's the ultimate bad day, and you're supposed to question, like, which direction do I go? And you're not, because it's like, oh, look, a song and dance number.
Yeah, that's, you know, you were saying that this was going to scare off six-year-olds and ruin live, you know, kind of throw them off. And that's what I think my biggest complaint was. It didn't do any of that. I was just like, oh, okay. Like, it went to a 6 where it could have went to a 10 on controversial, offensive, scary, terrifyingness. And I'm like, okay, you guys,
because it was R-rated.
Yeah. And I that's what I was looking forward to. Everything you were like, this shouldn't be made. I was just like, no, this should be made. This is awesome. And then I was just like, nope, it shouldn't have been made because that was lazy.
All right, now that I'm angry, can we talk about yours so I can continue to stay angry?
Yes, well, keep your anger up. Now, this was hard for me. My worst of the year, I kind of split up into two. I put the worst in my head and then my least favorite. I'll do my worst for sure. Allegiant, the newest Divergent film. That movie was so bad that they canceled the rest of the films and made it into a TV movie now. That's how bad Allegiant was. Horrible filmmaking, horrible CGI. The acting was stale. Man, did I not like that film.
I got nothing on that one because I'm like, yes, agreed. I was like, I really like Miles Teller, but do I want to defend him? I was like, not today.
No, not the time. So we'll go into probably my more controversial pick and my least favorite. I don't want to say it's a bad filmmaking wise because it has some shoddy CGI at times, but really not that horribly crafted. But worst of the year for me is Captain America Civil War. I know. I'll wait. All the boos are happening right now. Yep. Boos are over. Okay. Yes. I did not enjoy this. If I wasn't there for a press screener, I would have probably walked out as soon as the airport scene started.
Let me think about this one for a second. I can't think about this one for a second because that'd be dead air and we need to, it's a podcast. So we do, we talk about things. I enjoyed elements of Civil War. Was I blown away by it? No, but most of the MCU films, I'm never really blown away by them. I enjoy them. The first Iron Man is really good. I have high hopes for Spider-Man, which it introduced Spider-Man into the genre. So it's never going to be a bad film for me. Civil War did, we just talked about The Killing Joke. Civil War didn't carry across the elements that the original source material did. And they didn't actually go far enough for me with the film. Like, if they killed Tony Stark at the end of it, I would have been like, this is an amazing film. And not because I don't like Robert Downey Jr. the way that you don't like Robert Downey Jr., but like,
there needs to be weight.
And there was no weight. There was no weight to this film. And I thought this was going to be the turning point in the MCU films where they're like, oh, look, we've built this universe of characters. We kill off all the villains, but let's take out one hero. And if it was a Josh Whedon film, they definitely would have taken out a hero because that's what Josh Whedon loves doing. Like, oh, you like this person? Yeah, dead. Just dead because the ship crashed and they got impaled by randomness.
Yeah, and I think that's probably my biggest complaint, other than it's a little too jokey at times for something this serious. But no, I was just like, is this all we had to offer? We had this beautiful source material where Captain America dies and it kind of sets up this whole different part of Marvel. And then this one is just like, oh, we're just going to give you another Avengers movie. And you know, the fight between both sides, I was just never like, oh, these people don't even really hate each other. Maybe Black Panther was the only one with a real anger in there. But it just felt like none of this happened for a reason. It was just, here's all this cool stuff happening. And everyone's like, oh, it's so cool, that airport fight scene. To me, one scene alone does not make a film. And as cool and, oh, we got to see Giant Man and we got to see Spider-Man. Yeah, that's cool. But that doesn't make a good film to me. And I really... I think what really pisses me off too is after seeing it and seeing all the bashing Batman v Superman had, I'm like, the first half of Civil War was the first half of Batman v Superman. It's the same dry political drama that some people did not like in one movie but liked in this one. I just thought it was the complaints about this were odd, the compliments were odd, and for them to have that budget, the CGI was so weird in this movie. Like, super cartoony when it didn't need to be super cartoony. I just don't understand. And this isn't even just an MCU hate. Because I will admit, I thought Doctor Strange was okay. I did not hate it as much as I hated Civil War, where I was just like, God, this is exactly what I don't like about this brand. And it just pushed it further why I did not like it.
I will defend the CGI. The CGI works in that film. The Russo brothers did some really good filmmaking in Civil War, the way they kind of set up frames and they did things. They gave it a nice texture to it that wasn't in previous MCU films. The airport scene kind of definitely has the look of the MCU because it is the MCU. But the Russo brothers did do a lot of really good things in the film. The universe is just getting too big and they don't want to cut people out and they don't want to kill people off. And when that happens, you're going to get flooded. I don't have the same angst that you do against this film because I do enjoy Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark. I do like the evolution of Chris Evans' Captain America, Black Panther. Like, the introduction of Black Panther was really cool.
I will say that made me – I'm so into Black Panther because of that movie. I've always kind of – like, always a cool character. But if anything I can take out of that movie is, man, the Russo brothers did not need to – give that respect to Black Panther as they did. That was not his movie, and they gave him such a beautiful shining moment.
Chadwick Boseman, he carried that prince or kingly weight to him. Like you said, I'm just jumping on it. Like, you're excited for the Black Panther film after you see Civil War. So there are some good things in the film that sprinkle out to other future films, but we're in this universe building mode. Like, we need complete films, and we needed... Somebody needed to die. What Tony Stark or Captain America needed to die in Civil War, and they didn't. And then it's just like, oh, they're just going to have two factions now going on. And like, it's just, no, it didn't have the appropriate closure, and it just didn't have, I don't understand the love for Bucky I also think that Bucky should have just stayed dead. The Winter Soldier thing just bothers me as far as the comic book nerd. But as a comic book nerd, the airport scene is amazing. And I got to defend it because it's everything that you're looking for as a comic book nerd. You're like, oh, look, the pages just came to life. And the banter was awesome. And it's everything. It's on the core level why we like superheroes. And it's this, I mean, you were defending the Killing Joke song and dance song. I got to defend the airport scene because it was, it's everything we wanted to see. They just didn't wrap a movie around it, a cohesive movie around it. Because the end for Civil War just bothers me because one of them had to die.
Yeah, if that fight scene was a 13-minute short, I would have been like, holy shit, that was cool. But to sit through all the stuff that I had to sit through to then be that, I'm like, I just did not fall in love with it. And trust me, when we get to my most enjoyed of the year, everyone's going to be like, but you hate this, but like that. So I understand. I'm glad fans enjoy this.
Are you foreshadowing?
I am foreshadowing. Oh, look, better filmmaking than Civil War gave me. Whoops, sorry.
Oh. It's going to be a battle because you're going to have two films come out this year, DCU films. I'm going to have two MCU films. We're not really Marvel.
Like
we're
MCU
not
MCU films this year.
We're not next MCU. Year. Yeah, we have two or three.
There's Spider-Man and Guardians.
Guardians. No, it's Thor. Thor's at the end of the year.
Oh, exactly. Like Thor in that franchise, forgotten.
You're an asshole, my friend. Just straight up asshole. Like I have Mjolnir like sitting right behind me right now. And I have a picture. I have a statue of Beta Ray Bill. I have so much Thor shit around me.
And look, I like Thor. Thor should be a cool character, but like what they did in Civil War with Scarlet Witch and Vision is they take these characters and just kind of do nothing with them. They should be more powerful, more awesome, and they just kind of do nothing with
them.
Did
you see the mockumentary, What We Do in the Shadows?
With Thor?
No, What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, the vampire one?
Yes.
Yes, that was so awesome.
The director, his name is Toiki Wakawiki? Close enough.
Yeah, that you know what? We'll get it. That's close enough.
But he's the director of Thor.
Okay. You know what? That I have faith, but they always get good directors and then have their directors do nothing. Scott Derrickson, James Gunn, out of all of the directors, is the only one that is making the movies James Gunn wants to do.
Yeah.
So excited for that. But I just feel like, yes, that Thor has a cool director, but I also like the Russo brothers from Community. Don't really like the movies they've been doing, except for Winter Soldier. That was cool. Winter Soldier was fine. That's the only MCU film I will ever fully compliment. Winter Soldier. You gave me Robert Redford in an MCU movie. I'm good.
He shouldn't have been in that film.
He was too good for that film. Like, I'm glad he only acted against Samuel Jackson because I was like, no, please don't act against Chris Evans.
Hey.
I don't mind Chris Evans, but like him next to Robert Redford, it's how I feel about Walking Dead, where Jeffrey Dean Morgan is too good of an actor and he's eating up screen time on Walking Dead.
Oh, man. Let's get into, I'm so angry now after this stuff. Like, maybe we should put worst last, but worst in the middle is just killing me. I don't know how to recover out of this one.
Well, we'll recover pretty nicely because I really like your next pick for a film.
My surprise?
Your surprise one is honestly one of my surprises as well. Not my most surprise, but one of my biggest surprises.
Round three.
Well, after Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, I was so not happy about Batman. And I really didn't know where the DC Extended Universe Batman timeline or plot line was going to go. And I really liked Ben Affleck's performance as Bruce Wayne and Batman. I thought he brought probably the best Batman to screen to date, but there were still just some things off with it, just how it worked, the mechanics and the pacing of Batman and how he does what he does. But then The Accountant came along, and that is the Batman film that we deserved. The fight scenes, the thought process, the analyticalness, the snarkiness, everything that Batman is was in The Accountant. Just the analyzing everything, and then just the whole next level of The Accountant of like, the autistic nature of the character, and then Ben Affleck playing the autistic character was like, what? And then it had a goofy twist to it, but like, just so good.
Nothing in that movie should have worked. I feel like that movie kind of was set up like Anna Kendrick as a side character. I'm like, oh, weird, forced comedic thing. Everything in it, I'm like, oh no, this was not going to be good. I walked out of that being like, holy shit, The Accountant just blew my mind. It was, I think in my review, was like, it's like John Wick with autism. It's just like this crazy action film, but with this interesting, like you said, analytical side to it that comes with autism and just breaking things down and how he fought and how everything about that was just so beautiful. And I'm not a huge comedic person in movies, but Anna Kendrick's like kind of light humor added to it. But I will say even Ben Affleck was hilarious in that movie. The jokes that he did and like you said, his little snarkiness, perfect. He this further proved why he is the best Batman ever.
That fight scene with the belt, like just how he rescued like the his accountant, his employees, or the first people that he like rescues. That just the way the fight worked and how he unloaded on people was just something I hadn't seen before in cinema.
No, not at all. I everything was so new and refreshing in a film that I didn't think was going to push that hard. Man, it was just so new and so needed right now.
And then I think I really like little kids beating the shit out of each other or getting beat up. I think I really enjoy watching that. And just how crazy the dad was. And then just all the, there was something about the fight moves and like how he, because it went Jason Bourne level too. And then we had a shitty Bourne movie. Like this was my redemption movie of 2016. Like it redeemed all the shittier movies.
And that's a perfect way of saying what this movie was. It is such a redeemable film and everything that like we've seen before, like, this was okay. This was okay. Oh, crap, The Accountant was supposed to be just okay and turned out to be much better. The critics don't really agree with us on this. This was didn't do too well. It did okay, but I don't think people got it or loved it as much as we did.
It's a really hard film to market without kind of spoiling it. It's a really hard film to market because how do you market autistic Jason Bourne?
Yeah, there was no way, like I said, there is no way this movie should have worked. And for it to do as well as it did, and I don't think it was marketed well, and I don't think it fell into the right critics' laps. I think it kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit. But man, I'm so glad we got to like kind of praise this because it needed it. I think this movie is one of the best of the year.
I'm looking at your surprise film of 2016, and I got nothing but love for it.
Yeah, this was, you said it was your best movie of the year, and my surprise of the year was Arrival. I went into it being like, okay, sci-fi movie, Amy Adams, I've seen Contact, I love Contact, thought that was going to be it, but no, Arrival is this think piece art film. It just blew my mind of what it did and how it presented its material and how it made you think and how you made you feel. Oh, I have such love for Arrival. If The Handmaiden didn't come out this year, Arrival would have been my number one of the year. It is flawless filmmaking there.
The only problem I have with you, no, I have more than one, but one of my problems with you of 2016 is your love of Contact and comparing it to Arrival.
In the barest of plot senses, it's very, very similar. It's just about a woman trying to talk with aliens.
Contact is my most hated film. I gotta make a most hated list of films that just angered me because there's that Nicolas Cage, Meg Ryan film, The Angels in the Outfield, or whatever it was, the Goo Goo Dolls song.
Oh my God, I haven't even thought about that. I haven't even thought about any Nicolas Cage movie in a while.
Oh man, but that film and then Contact are like my two most hated films because Nicolas Cage was happy, and then Meg Ryan got run over by a semi full of lumber, and they could have ended it. They could have ended the film. They could have just ended it.
Well, this is what I like about, to say with Contact and then go to with Arrival is I just like a film that subverts its genre. Sci-fi films always show an alien. If it's a movie about aliens, you're probably going to see it. And then to Contact, I have no aliens. I was just like, oh, that's ballsy.
No, no, it's not. That's when I was like, I'm leaving the theater because we're never going to see an alien. The whole point, the movie's called Contact.
And, you know, she made contact. She talked with them. That's all that that's all to me that it was selling to do. With Arrival, I was just like, okay, cool. She's just going to talk to them. That's, you know, she's a linguist expert. That's kind of what we know. And then it's like, here is the whole universe. Here's your emotions. Have fun having to think about this movie for days after. And that's why Arrival is one of my favorites of the year. I didn't walk away from any movie this year really being like, wow. Oh, that's how I feel about this situation. Oh, that's, you know, how you would do with if you knew what's going to happen, how do you play it out? And no movie really made me feel that way. And so that's why Arrival kind of went into it not, I don't want to say low expectations. I went into it with, oh, okay, cool. And walked away being like, Amy Adams deserves an Oscar for this. That's how I walked away with it. Surprised that I've ever even said that sentence.
I mean, she is in Batman v Superman. I mean, like, it's, I mean.
And she was in three of my favorite movies this year. She was in Batman v Superman, she was in Nocturnal Animals, and she was in Arrival. Amy Adams had a hell of a 2016 for me.
Oh, man. I can't say enough good things about Arrival. And I'm trying to think about the other films that made me walk home thinking about what's going on in the world. And again, I think from our podcast, Elton John's Rocket Man was on the radio when I went home across the bridge to St. Pete, and it was nice out. I had the windows open, and I just like sucked in that song and that moment, because Arrival kind of resets your brain and gets you in a good frame of reference, or just kind of jars you. And that's kind of what I was talking about with like The Killing Joke. You like Arrival jars you. It gets you thinking on a different level. And you never got that with The Killing Joke, but The Arrival, that's why it's the best, or one of the best, is because it did its job.
Yeah, I really want this movie to do good at the award season. It deserves it, I think, and I really wanted to see it have a good 2017 with its award season.
It's a sci-fi movie. They're not going to give them that love.
And I know, and that's what's scary, because you know this isn't a normal sci-fi movie. This is sci-fi for, I don't want to say intellectuals to put down other sci-fi films, but this is a very intelligent film. So that's why I'm like, look, I know it's labeled as this, but don't go into it thinking it's an alien movie, it's a sci-fi movie. It is more than that. It's a film. It's a beautiful piece of cinema that needs to be praised.
Round four.
Because I don't want to end this show angry, we're going to defer to you for most enjoyed film of 2016, so then I can come back and I can talk about Sally Field.
You know, I was a little worried of how we were going to do this, but yeah, so my most enjoyed, everyone hold their breath, was Batman v Superman. I am sorry that I enjoyed this movie as much as I did for all the haters, but I have such a beautiful passion for this film. I don't think a superhero movie has moved me this much since Watchmen. And I know they're both from the same director, so maybe I just have a crush on Snyder. But I really have not felt this way in a long time about the superhero genre, and a genre that I'm almost was ready to check out on. And I was like, oh, Man of Steel was okay. To see Batman v Superman, I was just like, this is it. This is what I would do to make a comic book movie. It's super realistic, but then super cartoony.
No, it's not. Yeah, I was like, wait a second. I should wait till the period. I'll wait till the period. I'm sorry. I'm pausing.
No, it mixes elements where, like, the Nolan Batman movies were super realistic, where the MCU movies are super cartoony. This was right in the middle. It's a hardcore political drama, but then it gets down to these doomsday scenes, and it gets down to Wonder Woman. And I just really enjoyed it, and I will go down to defend the Martha scene. I don't mind that as much. I think Batman killing in this film works in the context of just this film. Does Batman need to kill in general? No. But this is a dark, evil, kind of hateful Batman. And this is supposed to be the shift of his character, being like, what I've done in the past needs to be changed because what I've done killed a man, basically. He ruined Superman in this film by being dark and evil. So now we get to see his character grow. I think this wasn't what people wanted, but I think this is what people needed.
Oh, you're going that route. You're going that route. Like, oh, we need this.
I think this was a refreshing need in the genre.
You know what? You talked about a lot of things in that sentence, but you left out the best part of Batman v Superman.
What was the best part?
Wonder Woman.
Yeah. I have an invisible jet hanging in my room. Like, she is my superhero queen. I can't believe how well she was handled in this film. Kind of how I feel about Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther in Civil War. That wasn't his movie. This isn't Wonder Woman's movie. But for them to handle them with such beauty and, you know, the score that Wonder Woman got, her little theme song is awesome. Like, that gets you pumped. Yeah, she was my favorite part. But no, I liked everything about this movie. Do I love Doomsday in the film? I don't think he really needed to be in there. I would have loved to see, like, Lex Luthor in, like, a mech robot suit. And that kind of been the villain, because that's something Lex has done in the past. So I would have loved to see something like that. That is my only minor complaint, is Doomsday in the film.
Hey, minor complaint? There was some bad CGI in this film.
Yeah, but it doesn't look as bad as Tony Stark's obviously standing on a green screen. Did not like that. There was a scene in Civil War that I was just like, that was hideous. I will say Batman v Superman, there's one that always sticks out to me. It's when Batman is in his, like, little mech suit and jumps on Superman and kind of goes through the building.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay, that looked bad. But honestly, I don't think the CG always that bad. But that's a Zack Snyder thing. His CG and the way he does it is so, I don't want to say artful in a, like, pretentious way, but very, like, it's very stylized. And I think that's what he brought to this, was his stylized sense. I don't want to say it looks as gorgeous as Watchmen, because I think that's his peak of what he did visually. But I really liked his visuals in this film. Does it get wonky? Yes. All CGI does, though. Very hard to get, like, a perfect, flawless CGI every shot, every scene. So, yeah, that does have some moments. But, no, I don't think Martha – I hate that people hate that as much. I don't understand that at all.
I didn't know they both had the same first name. And I could have swore I was a comic book nerd.
Same thing. I was just like, oh, because everyone just calls her Ma Kent. Everyone just knows her as, like Ma, and everyone's like, oh. So once I saw Martha, and I'm like, oh, that is the first time. Even that's kind of the Batman story, and that was that's how human Superman really is. Is his mom has the same name as Batman, and that was just so interesting. Of that, I know it's a cheesy way of doing it, but that's how I felt that Batman humanized him. Was just like, we literally have the same mom's name. My mom died. Your mom's about to die. Should I really be killing you? I thought that was such an interesting moment. Cheesy, yes. But I thought it was intriguing.
Well, you're allowed to have cheese. They're comic books. I mean, there's always a certain element of cheese in the superhero genre of comic books. And that's to be expected. It's just the elements and how you stack them together. I will say that after Batman v Superman came out, I was like, and I was like, okay, Suicide Squad is going to redeem the world of the DC Extended Universe. And then Suicide Squad was like, But the more I drift away from both of them, I have better admiration towards Batman v Superman. My biggest thing is just the morality of superheroes. And I understand that this is a darker universe, but I can't get behind it, just because that's not who the characters are. At the essence, at the core of Batman, at the core of Superman, that's not who they are.
But I want to see these characters challenged. And that's – if I have to see these same – that's my problem with Tony Stark, is there's no evolution of his character. He is the same snarky douchebag, no matter if he's crying about his parents in Civil War or if he's crying about Pepper Potts in Iron Man 2. It's always the same thing, where this one, I get to now see Superman kind of come back and grow. I get to see Batman come back and grow from this film. I know everything they did was a little controversial, but I really enjoyed, because I see what they're doing in the future. I really enjoy – kind of where they're building from this ground.
This wasn't a conversation about Tony Stark. And I mean,
no, but that's why I will say, like, character wise, that's the only compare. Like, I can compare other ones, but there was no growth in many superheroes. I will say, I think, like, Captain America has a good growth through films, but a lot of them come off stagnant. Even with the Christopher Nolan Batman films, I thought Batman didn't really evolve that much. He kind of got dumber as the movies went on. And with this one, I really want to see where Batman goes from here. And I think that's what I really appreciate, is this is the universe building I like, because this is surprisingly character-driven universe building. Usually Snyder does not do that, but this is really heavy characters.
There are ways to challenge characters, and there are ways to evolve characters. But there's essence of a character. We'll talk about Batman, we'll talk about Superman. We'll leave Tony Stark out of it, because the MCU is totally... they've gone in a different direction with that character, because he's supposed to be an alcoholic wreck that ends up hitting rock bottom and then grows from there. But they've totally pushed that storyline to the side. And that would have been something that you could have grasped onto. But with Superman and Batman, there are core elements to them that make them who they are. They do come off stagnant because both of them are on a mission. I think Spider-Man is that character as well. Like, things happen to him, then you get on the mission and you're going straight that way because, you know, I am vengeance, I am darkness, I am the Batman. Like, that's, you're going straight that way. The problem is we didn't see how Batman got to this point in time, which is a good and bad thing. What derailed him off of that moral compass that he was on?
Won't, though? That's, you know, I think everyone gets so excited for universe building, you know, with the MCU and other films, you know, if Harry Potter is doing it now. And that's why I'm like, let this world evolve more. Let them keep building what they're doing. And then we can kind of be like, I don't like the character. Also, these characters have been around since the dawn of comic books. I can't see the same shit more. I just saw decades of Batman films. I've seen decades of Superman films. I want to see something different. That's what I think was very excited was this was Zack Snyder throwing source material out the window and being like, cool, you know these characters? No, you have no idea you know these characters. These are different versions of the characters. And as I'm a casual comic book fan. I like a lot of these characters, but do they need to be the same person that they were in the comic books? No, I can't deal with superhero, like Boy Scout Superman. That would have turned me off in this film 100%.
That's the dynamic between Batman and Superman, is one person floats in the gray area. One person is in like straight up rule area of like, this is good, this is bad. And that should have been the dynamic that, because right now, all of us are in that moral gray area, you know? I mean, like, so that dynamic of like, okay, I'm going to break some rules. I'm not going to, that has a whole film in it as well. Also, as a comic book fan, a person who's read tons of comic books from Amazing Spider-Man to Batman to Superman, all this stuff. I've read revolutionary writers' work that has respected the history and the source material, but reinvented the characters and brought new things to the fold. And so there is a way to respect the source material and create something new. And that's the issue that it's not a DC versus Marvel issue, because it's not. It's fans of the genre, fans of the comic book are like, wait a second. There are certain elements that make up these characters, and you're not using any of those elements to create these characters and put them on screen. And yeah, so that's the problem as a fan of the genre of like, it's, you know, don't call it Scooby-Doo if Scooby-Doo isn't a dog. I mean, like, is it?
Yes, but that's why I'm so happy I don't have this baggage you do, because this sucks for you guys. That it's like, I'm so enthused that it's like, finally a different version of these characters that I've seen too many times. So
no,
I'm
you
so
haven't
glad.
Seen them too many times because you haven't, like,
I've seen
read
animated
the books.
Versions
you
of
haven't...
them. I've seen comic book versions of them. I've seen film versions of them. I've seen TV versions of them. I've seen these characters enough that I needed something new. So fuck source material. Do what you want to do as an artist. That's what I applaud Zack Snyder for doing was, I love these characters. I love where they come from, but I'm going to filter them through my eyes. And that's what I enjoy, because I don't get that a lot in the superhero genre. I'm not going to name another brand then, but there's a lot of times where artists don't get to create what they want to create. Zack Snyder got to create exactly what he do. As a filmmaker myself, I want to do that. I want
but
to do what Zack Snyder
did. It didn't work.
Yeah, because you guys are so stuck in your way of wanting what you want. As a fan who's kind of casual to this, I will never love a superhero film as much as I like Batman v Superman, because it challenged everything we thought we knew about these people.
It doesn't challenge it.
How does it not challenge? Because this was, we got to see Superman want to be a good, positive person, but the world hates him. It's like, cool, you saved people, but you still destroyed a bunch of shit. You're still kind of a bad guy. And I loved seeing him being like, look.
He's a bad guy because Zack Snyder made him a bad guy.
Because that's the world we're trying to portray. This is not this beautiful morale thing of good versus evil. The world's messy. that's what Batman v Superman showed me, was a messy world.
But we'll go to the core level of Superman. Superman's supposed to be better than us.
He's supposed to be. Doesn't have to be. Key word, though. Supposed to be. Have to be. No, there's no set rules of this. Sorry, this is a artistic genre. Let people do what they want to do. And that's why I fight for this so hard, is because this was the first time I got to see an artist take something he loved and reinvent it and do something new. I got to see Superman be challenged as a human of being like, I'm saving these people, but I'm not going to do it with a smile because people still are questioning why I'm doing that. That's the difference between 2016 and 1960, 1970, is everyone wanted that superhero. This was post-Vietnam. So it's like, oh, Superman saving everyone.
Okay, number one, let's get our facts straight, because this Superman was created by two Jewish creators and an anti-Semitic environment in 1939. You have World War II. Yes, so they were people getting slaughtered just for who they were, and you needed that person that was like, hey, I can save you, because there was nobody saving them.
Yeah, but this was, to me, this is how society is portraying good and bad people, and that's what I got from Batman v Superman.
I love that we're having this debate, but I get so worked up over this, because we were having this conversation again. Like, you're like, Matt, you shouldn't try to save the world. But like, that's who I am. That's who I want to be. And to see this negative portrayal of people that could inspire people to great things, it causes more harm than good.
Yes. And that's what I don't think we're portraying Superman as a negative. We're portraying the world around him as a negative. He's still that little Boy Scout deep down inside, but the world's not letting him be that way. And that's what I applaud from this. We're the opposite, where no one really wants Batman, but Batman's like, look, I'm going to be here doing what I need to do because shit's still going crazy. And there was just elements about this that I thought represented our society. And to me as a person, I'm not this happy-go-lucky human. And
I don't want you to be happy-go-lucky, but we talk about all these different negative things that are going on in the world. And Zack Snyder has an opportunity to inspire a generation with his work. And what he chose to do was to put morality on the side and make a film that was just gritty and death. And there were some like, okay, evolving of the characters. But that's that's the fact of like not respecting what a superhero is. I mean, and we talked about that with like Orlando after the Orlando shootings during our time. Like, what does it mean to be a superhero? And you have these elements, and the way the world is just getting more angry and more me versus you and MCU versus that and DC versus this. And I didn't even know Star Wars had hate, and that's happening too. But like, we're so divisive. And this is why I'm going to stand against this film. We're so divisive right now that here's a chance to kind of not give us the Boy Scout guide of the world, because he's not going to do that. I'm not asking him to do that. But what I'm trying to do is like, Superman doesn't kill. And I know that people point out every time that he killed in comic books, but like that, he's supposed to figure out the better way. Sometimes that better way is really tough and really hard, and it's painstaking. Sometimes you have to take that hard route to get there, and they're not trying to do that. He's not even like trying to, and that's my issue, because then you have a chance like, oh, I don't have to try to be the moral compass because it's a grittier world now. It's no big deal.
Yeah, I will agree that Zack Snyder took this time. He could have inspired, but no, he decided to flip the mirror and be like, look at you. This is who people are nowadays. This is the cynical people. This is the cynical world we live in. Haha. You guys get to now look at it and feel that way.
I think you're giving him way more credit than he deserves.
I think you're not giving him enough credit. I think Zack Snyder's not as dumb as we want him to be. I think Zack Snyder knows exactly what he's doing, and I applaud that. And yeah, let's talk about the Superman thing. What was Superman going to do? How many people did he kill then? Because we just talked about, oh, he finds better ways. He killed Zod because Zod was about to slaughter a bunch of people. I don't know. Not that bad of a guy to me.
He killed the whole entire Kryptonian universe. And he was like, they had their time.
They did.
No, they didn't. You don't have to. Like, he could have landed the ship. He could have done other things. Like, I mean, there are things that he could do. And I mean, again, this is me becoming going down to the core of a comic book nerd at this point in time. But he's Superman. He's supposed to figure out what he's supposed to do to make it work.
He's not supposed to do anything.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
I don't agree with that.
Because that's the whole difference. That's the whole point of Superman, is because the reason why there's the book called Red Sun, where he lands in Russia and he's raised by parents in Russia and raised by the Russian communists and becomes this Superman. And that's what the point of Superman is no, he ends up in Kansas with Ma and Pa Kent, and they teach him the moral compass of the world, and that's what the parents do. But then, like, they don't even regard that, and he's like, "Oh no, they had their times." Blah blah blah. Like, it's Man of Steel is great up till Kevin Costner dies, and then it just becomes like, "Yeah, we totally forgot what our parents taught us." Like, there's core values that you learn as from your parents, and you take with you, and that's what's supposed to happen in there. And
those get challenged, though. I've learned things that my parents taught me, and that's what this movie did, is it challenges we do and everything we know.
It kills to kill.
I personally think it did.
It kills just to kill.
No, not at all.
He could have – I mean, that's the point. It's like, why did he have to get stuck snapping? It's just – I mean, my whole conversation with Man of Steel, that's been 4 years in the wake. But it's – I'm so mad right now, because this is me, whether, you know, this will even, you know, parlay it into the Trump angst and the angry white cynicism that's going on right now, and all the negative things that are going on in the world. Like, there's supposed to be this spark of light, and that spark of light is supposed to be Superman, and he has a responsibility.
Then why is nobody getting on Civil War for it being a non-morality movie, has no moral compass in that movie? That film's dark. Same thing with Rogue One. Everyone's loving that film, but there's no morality in it. There's a no moral compass. This is, look, we're from bad worlds. Sometimes we do good things. Sometimes we're good people who do bad things. I don't know why Batman v Superman is this, like, end all of, like, oh, this is dark cynicism, horrible people doing horrible things. I just did not understand the fact that this needs to happen. We can't just all be, oh, yay, everything's going to be fine.
Nobody's like that. Look around. There's nobody that right now. There is
you
no.
Really want that.
I do, because I think that's what the character is. And that's what we fucking need right now. Like, that's what we need. Like, it's not like we're getting. We have Trump as president right now. I mean, like, if we needed a moral compass, it was fucking on election day. And guess what? We threw morality out the fucking door, and God damn it, man. Like, seriously, like, there are a certain amount of responsibilities in the world. And with Superman, there is a little bit of responsibility to take care of what those creators created, because they had a vision. And just shitting on somebody's creation to shit on it because I want to show a different world, that's not okay. Create your own superhero at that point in time if you want to show the grittier times. And that's what creators have done. But with Superman, with Batman, there was other people that gave their everything to, that made nothing to create these characters and died penniless and put the foundation there. And then to just destroy it and be like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, that's disrespecting so much. And then the fact that we actually, like, need that moral compass now more than ever is just a double whammy. And that's my personal belief. And, like, I'm not a religious guy. I'm not a Catholic Bible thump or anything. It's just from me reading comic books as a kid. And, you know, you have your gray areas. I grew up reading Spider-Man, The Avengers, Batman, Superman, and you have Wolverine, you have Deadpool, you have the Punisher, you have the Ghost Rider. So you have that whole genre of grittiness, and you have morality, and you have the Boy Scouts here, and there's so many other characters that you can show that grittiness of that dark angst and bring it well and you can write it well and all those things. But then you have your moral compass. But then to have no moral compass characters in there just doesn't work.
But they ended up being that way, though. That's where I like – I think everyone gets stuck on the first half of that film. But the second half is all about Batman admitting that he needs a better moral compass. This is also Superman being like, oh, cool. Maybe I do need to actually protect this world instead of just like half-ass doing it. I think there was a lot of evolution and growth in this. That's why I loved it as much as I did, is this to me represents the time we live in, the best we did, and then it shows that things can change, and I can't wait for the future of this films because this is showing a shift in it. So where 2016 was this dark, cynical time, I feel like with Justice League next year, we're going to get a little bit lighter of stuff. We're going to see more happening and more positivity coming because we had to go through the dark to appreciate the light. And that's what I liked about this, is it showed us the darkest of dark. So later on, when we see the lightest of light, we can be way more excited and fall in love with it more.
I like your optimism. I would like to think that was Zack Snyder's vision. And then the only problem is we're stuck in this like corporate Warner Brothers world where we know that people have rewritten things and Geoff Johns has gone in there and...
Trust me, once he got in, I got scared as soon as he got brought in.
I'm always optimistic about these films. And I go in there with an open mind, and I want to enjoy myself in all films that I go see. And when it comes to the superhero and Star Wars and all that other, you know, the pop culture genre that we cover. And I hate to get so animated and angry about these things, but it's just, you push the passion button. Justice League will come out. Wonder Woman will come out. I think Wonder Woman will have that moral code that I'm looking for because she's a warrior. And there's a code. There's a code for that. I'm not saying she needs to, again, I'm not saying she needs to be a Boy Scout. There just has to be, she's going to be the defender of justice. And that's what she's going to do. And she's going to take heads and she's going to, you know, slaughter the Nazis and stuff like that. And that's going to be, I'm hoping it's going to be the inspirational piece that I'm looking for because she's going to step up.
Nope. And I think because this is if you like paid like how Batman v Superman, her introduction is she's gone after Wonder Woman. After the movie we see, she takes a break from the world. So I don't think we're going to get this inspirational piece. Steve Trevor's going to die. And I think we're going to see her have to go into hiding. So I don't think we're going to get her lighthearted like – I'm going to save everyone.
It's
that
not
moral
okay.
Compass
again,
movie yet.
Again, I don't understand why you go into this like lightheartedness for moral compass. Like you can have gritty dramas that gut wrench and make emotional decisions and you make choices and you do things and it's tough to make those. And you can make the most amazing film in the world that has a moral compass and incorporates all the things that make cinema amazing to do that. This is where I ask people to try harder when it comes to writing. Don't be simple in the writing. Don't go that extra mile. And so you can have a film that ends on a downer note or ends on a gritty note, but still inspires people to be better. Because that's what superheroes are supposed to do. Superheroes. That's what they're supposed to be. They're not supposed to be heroes. They're supposed to be superheroes, and they're supposed to inspire people to be better.
Yeah, but we all take inspiration from different places, though. I'm inspired by pieces like Batman v Superman. This shows me that like I'm a dark, cynical person, but there can be things that shift me. You know, and that's what I get inspired by pieces like this. And I get very passionate and very happy because I get tired of the same representation.
Does it make you want to be a better person?
You can't tell me how I feel, though. Because that's I felt by the end
no,
of the film.
Does it, like, does it want you to be a better person?
I felt it did.
Okay. Do you want to help like old ladies get across the street now and stuff like that? Like, does it make you want to like pick up garbage on the street? Like, do you want to make this world a better place after seeing Batman versus Superman?
You know what? Maybe not to that extent because I'm not that nice of a hurt person. But I feel a lot with what Bruce Wayne said at the end of the film is I have a responsibility now because I caused all this fucked up shit.
Right.
I have a responsibility to fix this.
Right.
And that's what I liked at the end of that film was like, cool. Someone admits, even though they've done bad things and they've had not great, you know, choices, they've made dumb decisions, that there is time to grow and move. That's why I don't want to judge all of this on the emotion and the characters until I see them fully evolve to where, because I think everywhere you want it to be will be there eventually. But I think they started in a darker spot for a reason.
And they're taking a long... This is the problem with universe building.
Taking a long... We've had two movies. Three, two and a half. Because Suicide Squad's kind of like not in the main story of these.
Okay, so Justice League is a part one and part two. So it's we're at four movies for the evolution of it. And then do we start our universe? Does the universe that I want start after the first Justice League movie or the second Justice League? I mean, like, that's...
Justice League's supposed to be supposedly the first shift of it. I don't know if it came after a lot of the, like, your opinions on it and reviews of, like, we need a little bit more happiness or more of a good morality to it. And that's what supposedly is. This is supposed to be Batman being like, I need to make up for everything bad I did. So I think Justice League will be the first shift of it. I don't think we're ever going to get a cheerful movie. I think these always are going to be darker, but
and then that's,
I do
that's,
think
again,
we're going
to
see.
That's fine. Having have a tonal difference than the MCU movies, films, that's fine. And I really hate, it sucks that they're coming. I mean, it's great that it's coming out at some time, but I hate that it's a battle between this or that or blah, blah, blah. Because, I mean, like, each one of them has their flaws. Each one of them has their flaws. But it's always I'm better than you. I'm better. And that's sort of just like, ah. Because none of the, I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, that we, Captain America, like, he's supposed to be that Superman character where he inspires people to be better. And there, some of that point, like, you know, in the first film, Captain America, you know, first Avenger, where he's like a scrawny kid and just getting up, taking beatings, like, that's that raw point right there.
Let me bring up something with Captain America then. Why do you have no problems with him openly helping a horrible person in Civil War? That's not good Captain America, cheerful, you know. Good. He literally went against the whole system of what he's supposed to be representing to save his kind of little boyfriend guy. Like, I just thought that to me was just like worse than anything Batman did.
No, it's a good point. I talked about it not having the essence of the book because it was more of the book itself was about the government taking away civil liberties from heroes, and that was supposed to be the battle. But then MCU transferred it into, you know, this global epidemic, and then it ends up getting shoehorned into trying to save his friend because his friend always saved him. And, you know, you get into this, like, redemption of Darth Vader clause from Return of the Jedi where I'm just like, I don't get it. Why would you want to redeem Darth Vader? But, I mean, like, that's why it's not on my list. I didn't even make my top 10. I mean, like, that's the thing, is it doesn't have to be a battle between Captain America and Civil War versus Batman versus Superman. That's not what I'm talking about, because it's in the same thing you brought out Star Wars and the morality of Star Wars. Like, that was a gritty war drama, and, you know, the conversation in Rogue One was obvious about doing shitty things when you think you're good, you know, and that probably one of the first times one of these bigger blockbuster shenanigans that Ruben hates, you know, kind of admitted, you know, that thing, whether how obvious it was. But
I will say Star Wars has always been pretty good at it, because I think the prequels did that very well of showing how dumb the Jedis are. These are supposed to be the good people, but they let the Siths rise from literally inside of them. That's what I really like, that I think the Star Wars genre has always done pretty well. I said Star Wars genre, like, unfortunately, it is a whole thing of its own. But that's what it's done, though. It showed you that sometimes good isn't always good, and sometimes bad isn't always bad. And that's what I enjoy.
Okay, bad is always bad, just so everybody knows.
But
bad
look
is...
at Vader, though. Vader was supposed to be this horrible human being, but at the end of Return of the Jedi is the last one. Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm not going to kill my son. I'm going to do this. You know, so I think sometimes we do learn that characters aren't just one way, and that's what I liked. To go back to Batman v Superman, is I got to see what I know that they're supposed to be, and then to see this, that it's like, well, will they grow? Now, if they don't grow and they stay these same kind of not great people, my whole opinion will change, and I will be like, look, we're not doing what we should be doing. But for now, I really like what the DC Universe is doing with showing us this first level of these characters and the first layer of them. I hope they evolve, like we got to see, you know, look at Darth Vader evolve from three films, and then to see in six that we kind of see the prequels. And so that's what I want to see. I just want this time to be judged fairly. That's all I would ask for, is let this keep growing. And then we could be like, kind of, I think a lot of people do this, is we start judging before things are complete. It's like, judging the whole Harry Potter series after three movies. I would have been like, I don't know, because I don't know how this is all going to go. And that's the problem is, like you said, universe building happens and we should focus on singular films. But I would like to see, if I know this is going to be a franchise, I want to know before I judge it too harshly on character wise.
Agreed. And the problem is Man of Steel was not set up to be a trilogy.
Yes.
And so that's where you start having the issues of, and that comes down to Warner Brothers and their whole shit management organization of just craziness, because they should have outlined it a little bit better of what's going on. But I think they're very reactionary. And that's where, again, you should be worried about like what's going to happen with Justice League and with Geoff Johns going in. Because if you like these films and you like the kind of thing that's going on, Warner Brothers is like, we're making money, but like everybody hates it. So what do we do? Blah, blah. And it's like, you bring in Geoff Johns, and then if he I don't want to say whitewashes this, but if he kind of puts his like happy coat of paint on it, you know, what do you get? Because then it's, you know, I saw his Green Lantern, and that wasn't good either.
I know, that's why everyone's like so excited that he's going to save the DCEU. I'm like, oh yes, because his first outing with these movies was a fantastic representation. He's a great comic book guy. I will always say what he does with DC and what he's done with Rebirth right now, because I actually finally bought my first Rebirth comic. Very excited for that. Loving it. But no, I get nervous because I also get angry too. Sometimes I want things to be judged on an even playing field. It's like, I judge movies the same way throughout the whole thing. Do I have certain likes for some things? Yeah, sure. But I go into these Marvel movies kind of wanting to like them because, God, I want to not hate every movie that comes out from a whole brand. That sucks. It gets a little boring to be like, these movies are coming out three times a year and I hate every one of them. That's not fun. So I know I do go in. That's what I just – it's a whole critical world. And kind of like, I'm glad I got to show you, or you got to get a little bit more in the middle where it's just like, just judge these fairly. Just wait. And just calm down a little bit. I'm glad we did not end on this, because your anger was I got a little scared there for a second.
Angry. I had this anger when I was 12, 13 years old, because I was reading Spider-Man and everybody was going apeshit over Wolverine, the Punisher, and Ghost Rider, because we were getting this like grittier world. And I was like, no, superheroes aren't supposed to kill people. Like, this is where to. So this is the same thing I've been preaching about for 28, almost 30. It'll be 30 years, and if, you know, 5 years from now, it'll be 30 years. But this has been my thing. I love comic books, and I love that pulpy feel of what's going on, and I love the wonderment that you get from these characters, and the fact that you could read something and you could be like, oh, this kid's going through the same shitty situation I am. He's got some superpowers, but like, he's still struggling, but he's maintaining that moral compass, and he's maintaining that route where he should go. And it'd be like, you know what? You're having a tough day, but so is Peter Parker, and you're going to make it through, and you're going to get to high school, and you're going to get through it. And, you know, like these, and the same thing with like, you know, for me, it was like the Robin characters growing up, and then with Tim Drake, because him and I were the same age when they came out. And then again, when I got older, it was Dick Grayson as Nightwing, and he was going through his late 20s or early mid 20s, whatever ages they are, and stuff like that. And he was just battling through it. And it's you kind of bring these characters to heart, and they kind of help you out. And only in the comic book store, like, there are so many fucked up, crazy, evil, dark comic books that come out, and like horror genre and just every genre possible is out there in comic books. And I've read some amazing things. I've read some gritty things. But the superheroes, you know, I have a special place over here with them, and that you're supposed to treat them with a certain amount of respect. And I've seen writers come in and just trash everything that their forefathers had done. And I understand the art form. I understand art in general. And I understand that every generation wants to create something new. And part of that creating something new is trashing the previous generation. And I totally understand it. I really understand it with music. And I've seen it firsthand where, like, my music just angers my dad. You know, that where that screaming pop rock where they're just screaming and there's no melody at all, that drives my dad insane. And he's a musician. He just doesn't understand it. And I was like, and so I've seen it now that I'm 40, I've seen it through other years where people just try to create something new. And that's what I love. I love that. And I do understand the certain part of the generation that just needs to trash the previous generation and start from scratch, burn it all down and go from there. And that's what I love about what we do and what we cover. But as you've noticed from the yelling, I really want to defend my superheroes.
And I totally respect your passion for it. I really enjoy it. That's why I like these conversations. That's why I wanted to put Batman v Superman on my list, because it did place it. But I really wanted to have this conversation because we do come from different worlds of this. And I like that we kind of meet in the middle at some places. And, you know, our passions are very passionate. But we still – and that goes with us, is we still respect each other. And that's what I want out of any of this, is like – if you're going to debate movies or cinema or music or anything, just have a respect for the person you are talking to. And that's what I like that we got to do, that is kind of break down these films and come from our different moral places or different walks of life and just be like, look, this is what we want and this is what you want. And I think it's fun.
I don't even know how to talk about my most enjoyed movie of 2016 now. But one of my favorite actors right now is Max Greenfield. I think what he is doing on New Girl is some of the funniest things going on right now as Schmidt. Schmidt is a character that when they go back 100 years and they start putting up characters from MASH and Family Ties and like all the different sitcoms, Schmidt's character is just solid and so funny. And the one lines and the craziness and the thought process that is going on with Schmidt is phenomenal. It's the only, probably one of the only reasons why I watch New Girl, because it is, you know, it's Schmidt. Schmidt's a show. But Max Greenfield, he has a movie that came out this summer or this past spring. It's called Hello, My Name is Doris. Sally Field is the lead in it. She plays a 60-something woman and she is romantically trying to get involved with Max Greenfield's character in it, and they work in this trendy millennial world where it's a clash of millennials versus baby boomers and Cagney and Lacey. Lacey of Cagney and Lacey is in it. The Bleachers are in it. The music group, the Bleachers. There's some good music. There's a lot of, this is a good cast. It's fun. And then Sally Field's character is kind of a hoarder, so there's an emotional level of like, because people have died, and you know, because she's older, people have died, and it's got a couple different layers to it that brings it to that next level of film and makes it why it's one of those films that I enjoy. And then the way it just kind of ends, it ends on a good, you know, it ends on a note, and that note I liked. Wouldn't say it was a good or bad note, but like, it's just a good, and it was good to see Sally Field, because you don't really see her that often anymore because Hollywood doesn't like older people unless it's Helen Mirren.
Well, I agree that. Do you agree with that? She was a great Aunt May, by the way. I really could have had her in more of these Spider-Man movies. I love Sally Field, and see her in Aunt May, and I'm like, God, you play that role so well. Now we had to do sexy young Aunt May, but yeah, I love Sally Field. I didn't know much about this movie until you really started talking about it, and Max Greenfield, I first saw him on American Horror Story. So I was like, oh, cool. Aww, I don't know
this. You saw that?
Yeah, so I saw him on that show, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, let me look back to him. So I started looking at him, like stuff from The New Girl, and I'm like, okay, cool. I saw you kind of get like raped and thrown into a bed on American Horror Story, but now I got to see you be funny. Yeah, he's definitely like a name in Hollywood that I don't know too much about, but I'm really excited to see him grow. And Sally Field's in there, and I really like the story of how you described it as like kind of baby boomers versus millennials. That kind of intrigues me, because I am the prototype of a millennial. Like, if you're gonna make a millennial, probably be me. Like ambiguous, brown, kind of gay. Yeah, it's kind of awesome. I'm the definition of a millennial. So to see this kind of like clash of worlds, and I really am interested in Sally Field and anything kind of playing a cute older lady who's a hoarder. I'm sold.
It's, you know, it's not gonna, it was a perfect it's a perfect Sunday afternoon movie. You go through, you watch it, you enjoy it. It's got some good lines in it, you know, but it's just one of those movies that kind of kind of like just held on to me and was like in my corner of like, ah. And I think I watched the trailer like 22 times before I actually came around to like renting it, because I was like, ah, this is kind of funny. And Morris in America, that's another film that was kind of like this that I really enjoyed. And that's what I really like about Netflix and Hulu, is that you're getting these direct-to-video films that they're not normally going to make, and they're getting out there because, you know, you can make a few bucks on Netflix. You can make a few bucks on Hulu. Morris in America came out in August, and it is Marquis Christmas. No, Craig Robinson. Well, Marquis Christmas is Morris, but Craig Robinson is the father, and it's a father son in Germany, and that is, and he wants to be a rapper, the son. So he just, it's just another bizarre when he flows some raps down in Germany, and people are like, what? But it's an awesome coming of age misadventures of a 13-year-old American living in Germany. So Morris in America, that is another good one. And Sally Field, I'm exhausted after this episode.
Yeah, this was I didn't kind of go into this thinking it was going to be as draining as it was, but kind of end of the year lists are like that. All this passion that we've had since January basically kind of just comes into December, and we're like, we have a lot of things to say. Even like you said, you had a Man of Steel rant building in you for a couple of years that you got to get out as well.
Oh man, I guess this is the end.
This is the end, which is a great movie, by the way, from a couple years ago. But no, I'm so happy that we got to have this talk. As passionate as we both got about Batman v Superman, we had a lot that we agreed on as well, too. So that was kind of nice, too.
Yeah, I will talk to you in 2017, my friend.
I will talk to you in 2017. Just don't yell at me as much in 2017.
Just don't talk about the morality. Just don't talk about the morality of Superman, and I'll be fine.
I'll keep that in my notes
just
for next
year. Just
skirt
around that little atomic bomb, you know?
Once Justice League comes out, I'm like, it was good, period. Not talking about anything else. It was good.
Well, I mean, I have Baby Groot to look forward to in 2017, and hopefully he hits the boom button on the nuclear device.
Oh, I want him to hit that button that Rocket did not want. Yes, 2017. I can't wait to start talking about movies, you know, we're looking forward to next year as well, because there's a lot happening. And once we get into 2017, we'll kind of look forward of what we're going to look into next year.
Hi, man. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, my friend.
Hey, Matt, we survived another episode. Oh, no!
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter @monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram @monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter @MatthewSardo. My co-host, EJ, is also on Twitter @EJChristWithAK. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio. That's our new home. Go to it. Check it out. We love it. If you have a chance, we'd greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. As always, the best way to listen to the show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 105th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. Special shout out to my co-host, EJ Marino, for putting up with me. I made it tough this episode.
Oh, you made it really, really tough. But, you know, thank you for putting up with me as well, because I'm not the easiest person to deal with. So that was nice of you.
No problem, man. I will talk to you in 2017. EJ Marino, one last time, shout out. Jeff Shea is creator of our amazing intros and outros. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkey Spinner Robots logo. Are you a monkey or are you a robot? The question will be answered in 2017. The staff at Visual Realm built our website and keeps us up running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is the 2016 edition of Monkeys Fighting Robots. Out.